that's what makes a good play. If you can connect with something in the play and identify with something in the play. But first of all, I'd like each of the actors to introduce themselves. And then I'm going to throw it over to Ted to talk a little bit about his thoughts on the play as the director of the play and the focus of what happened. And by the way, I just have to, before we do that, I've just got to say, 10 years ago? 10 years ago, Ted was working...
Seven or eight, 91.
But I met you the year before.
Oh, so around 8 to 10.
Well, about 9. Somewhere in the last 10 years, I came up to Holden Village to do theater, and Ted was on volunteer staff. I remember him working in the snack bar and working with minors and other things. And I sucked him into being involved with doing some improv. And then I cast him the next year in a play, which was his first formal play, right? And since then, it's all history. But it's been a pleasure for me to come back this year with Ted, and especially a pleasure to work with this gentleman, who I think did a magnificent job in 1 week, less than 1 week. We're all very tired, so if we get emotional today, you've got to forgive us. Okay, why don't we start with the in-house actress,
Woo!
Tracy.
Hi.
Excellent.
She's getting it.
I played Rachel and Richard's wife, of course, and I wanted to have that baby. I gotta have a baby. You want me to explain anything else?
I think we can go back. Yeah, just okay.
My name is Joe Anthony. You can hate me if you want, but I'm a very lovable person. I played Richard, the guy who was not very interested in taking the child after hearing the problems. That's the part I played.
My name's Ursula Burton, and I played Wanda, who was the woman having the baby.
And I'm Mike Lark. I played the nicest character. Rom the lawyer.
And I'm Ted Madison. I played Al, and basically wanted to do that role because I could cut my hair really short. And drink beer on stage.
Perfect role.
I sought out, I went on the internet. I did a search, short hair and beer, and I came up with this play. No, not really. So now I should talk just briefly about how I came across the play and why I chose it for up here. I was just looking for a good story. Ultimately, that's what I'm looking to provide, is a good story with characters that people will connect to. And you know, if it's got all this that in it too, then it gets my attention. And I was also looking for a smaller cast. I didn't know back in January, February, March that I would be directing. I did know I'd probably have a chance to bring a couple actors with me, so I wanted to have a smaller, more intimate style piece. But you know, basically I found this story, I read it, and as soon as I put it down, I said, well, this is it. And I found myself connecting to each character through it, and that's all I really can say right now about the piece, that I thought it was a great story that needed to be told, and that this is the kind of community where this kind of story would really make an impact and cause discussion, and it's such a great place to be for that. This is not the real world. You don't do a lot of theater in the real world and then sit down and have a forum afterwards. And that's what's so great about Holden. And then it just sort of happened that I was finding my actors, and and Michael was pretty busy with stuff at California Lutheran, and it was more just in the last month that I proposed to him that I direct it, because I had been pretty involved with the play up until then, and it was a great opportunity for me, because it was the first chance for me to direct, and it was kind of a nice circle for me to really do my first performance up here 8 or whatever years ago, and now to come up and direct for the first time was a great chance to have, and to have Michael around mentoring and providing some guidance through that. So I want to thank him for allowing me to do that and helping me see some of the things I certainly couldn't see, because it was a mind blower to be acting and thinking about what it looks like. So anyway, ultimately though, the story is why I chose it in this community.
Yeah. And I think we should point out that to tackle a play like this takes a lot of commitment, the commitment from the actors, but the commitment from the village too. And I think I'm speaking on behalf of Ted, but I know myself, it's you've got to walk a kind of a thin line when you're doing a play for an audience that's kind of a captive audience. I mean, you folks, a lot of you just come up here, and you're given very, there weren't a lot of options for entertainment last night. I think it was a bold choice. When Ted first sent the script to me, and I read it, I called him and I said, well, I think it's got a lot of good things for Holden, but gosh, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be totally willing to take the chance to do this. I think it's a really good thing to do, and I really want to applaud the administration and permanent staff of Holden for taking the artistic chance and the commitment to deal with issues. Theater always, I think, gets a bad rap. Because I teach at a Lutheran college, sometimes I feel it's worst among the Lutherans, because Martin Luther was a songwriter and he didn't write plays. I sometimes wish if he'd written plays, it would have been all different. But I think the nature, because you bring characters alive, and sometimes characters are not nice people, and they use language that may be offensive, and they use epithets and all kinds of stuff that get in the way. And I think this play, and I really applaud Ted, who is the primary champion of this play, and then the communication that went back and forth between Ted and the village, and Ted would call me and said, well, this is the letter I'm sending today. How do you think this sounds? And I really thank the village for their support of this, I think, very important work and very well-written work. And by the way, the line in the play where Ursula says that she's a Lutheran is real. It's in the play. It's in the play. Well, the playwright's name is Jane Anderson. So you can kind of figure. I think I'm going to stop talking now and sort of open up the discussion for us. And you can ask any of us questions, either about the production, the roles, the characters, because one of the things that actors do and directors do, they spend a lot of time. It's not the standard line for when you talk to an actor is, how could you learn all of those lines? And that's just the tip of the iceberg, I think. Tracy, and by the way, I've got a young woman. this young woman was recruited by mail from the village volunteer staff, from the village staff.
I begged.
And she did all the work on the play before Ted got up here by herself. And then this is her very first role. And she rehearsed just this week, since Sunday. We had our first rehearsal Sunday. And,
Well, I thought this was a perfect forum for this. I've reflected, I'm in a lot of settings where this probably wouldn't go over. So you had concerns, but I thought as a receiver, it was the perfect place to do this.
Yeah. It seems like they've dealt with a lot dicier issues around here in the last few years.
Yeah. But somehow I always think that drama is more controversial than discussions. Because it's people living life rather than sort of analyzing and tearing apart.
Now, did you bring up Joe and Ursula specifically for this play?
Joe and Ursula were born to play these roles. So it's just the stars, everything got in its right orbit. Yeah, no, I recruited them in LA. It's friends of mine. I've worked with both of them before. Wow. So the explanation of trying to explain Holt the Village to people who, they keep saying, "You didn't tell me this. You didn't tell me this." But yeah.
So it's both of them their first time at Holt?
Yes.
They're not.
When I first heard about the play, the red flag for me was after the high school class had just done The Diviners, in which they said the word shit, and at the end, one of the characters died, Maggie died, and people were really upset. People, you know, they didn't have a forum scheduled, but they ended up having one because people wanted to talk about it. So when I read the play, I was nervous that, you know, maybe this was too much for Holden, and that's what started the discussion. But I don't know if it had anything to do with it being high school students or it being Holden. It's just...
Maybe you should say that there were changes made in the play.
Yeah, I think we, on our first reading, we went through the script and edited some of the scatological language, because there's a lot of scatological language is four-letter words. We edited a lot of the four-letter words, because there's a point sometimes where if you're offended by language, then all you can hear is the language. And sometimes, I think sometimes movies especially really big time because of the language, and the story gets lost. And I think what we weren't willing to do. I think it's a problem. Sometimes it's easy. It's easy to put in four-letter words. I've directed several plays by David Mamet, who does a lot of four-letter words. But when he writes, his four-letter words are used very almost in an orchestration. But there are a lot of writers that, for lack of creativity or intellectual depth, resort to scatological language. So Ted did most of the editing of language through this, and he said, "How about this? How about this?" And we changed some, but there was one particular word in the show which we debated about, and finally we got authorization. But we felt very strongly that it had to be used.
Well, two words, actually.
Two words.
When I say the N-word, that clearly is it's like I can feel the shot to the stomach of the audience. Tracy's F-word on the music, but both of those were pretty important, and Yes.
I just want to say, just though, to add to that, I don't feel that the language as it's written in this play is used inappropriately at all. We did take out a bit of it, but it's actually used quite effectively. It's not used as a lack of
No, this is a very good play.
So,
can you say more about the playwright? Did you already?
No, I didn't say anything about it.
Don't know her, just read the work, you know, it was... She's getting done. This play is being produced a lot now, I think.
She has another a play that has gotten a lot of work. It's called Laughing Wild. It's done a lot at colleges and universities and smaller regional repertory theaters. This play was done at the Louisville Humana Festival. It was part of. And that's a major international play festival. And it received one of the awards at the Humana Festival and then has been done by a number of regional theaters. And the play was produced for Showtime. And so it was done on Showtime as well.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the great contrasts of emotions that you have and how subtle they are, because your character Al appeared to be, he also had a strategy, just as you had a strategy for, you know, what you were doing, and then you had your other emotions going that were operating from the heart. So, would you like to comment on that a little bit, the depth of those emotions that were counterplaying with each other back and forth?
Why don't you take that one? Yeah, all right. What I've in my experience as an actor, it's for this role in particular, when I first got the script, the challenge is to see beyond what appears on the surface to be a guy. My fear coming into this community was that I was going to be stoned the next day. but what I've learned to do as an actor is what I've realized is that drama is based on conflict, and that I've got a lot of conflict in my own head. And if I can find the two sides of that conflict which exist, then I can decide which one I want to be for this particular role, for these particular moments, and I can play that side fully. So when I'm talking to Tracy at the end about not wanting to take this child, there's a part of me in that situation that would resist taking that child. There's a part of me that would want to embrace that child. And so I find for this, if I was playing Tracy's role, I'd find the part of me that wanted to embrace that child, and I would talk to the other side of me that didn't want the child, and that's how I would address it. But for Richard, I had to take the side that was resistant to it, and kind of let that blossom and embrace that, and confront the other side of me that wanted to take the child. So I don't know if that addresses emotions for me as an actor, and I think every actor has their own way of dealing with this. But emotions for me. It's not something that I focus on, because emotion doesn't tell a story necessarily. Actions tell a story. The action I take will tell a story. And then as a human being, I am emotional. It's an animal. It comes in, it flows in, it flows out like the ocean. It comes in and it goes out. And if I focus on trying to be sad or trying to be angry, then I basically sabotage any opportunity for myself to be emotional at all. But if I let myself, I just let myself alone, and focus on my wife and the situation and what I'm trying to cause her to do, which is maybe you could talk about actions. If I just focus on what I'm trying to cause her to do, then by getting it or not getting it, that may create some frustration or some upset or some anger, depending on what happens to me from one moment to the next.
Yes, back there.
I can't stay real. So there's something I kind of wanted to bring up, and I was just really struck by this after I watched it last night. I would like to bring up the fact that in the beginning of the play, when Al, you know, uses that racist word, and Rachel, like, you know, comes down on him. She's like, no, that's horrible, blah, blah, blah. And then I wanted to bring up the hypocrisy of later on, her and Ron being prejudiced against the child. And I was really struck by the fact that it was okay, almost, for them to be prejudiced against that baby, but it was clearly not okay for the racism.
Well, I think that's a really good point.
That's one of the things that I find so interesting about the play. Because I would assume that many of us would have similar political feelings about that type of thing. And in a way, it's very easy to say, oh, you can't say words like that, or you can't behave that way. But then things are brought up over and over on the play, like, do you live next door to these people? Because you don't know what it's like to live next door to them. Or what would it really be like? I mean, it's one thing to say, I held the baby, and here's a soul. But this is a life choice. Are you going to raise a child like this? People have their limits. And in a way, is it fair to take a child that you're not going to love, that you're not going to give a good life to? I mean, it's very easy to say that Richard is cold and removed, but maybe in some sense he's not. I mean, it's so these things are so huge. It's very easy to just sort of watch it and say, oh, well, I would take that child. But, you know, what had they always talked about? And Rachel, she's saying she's going to take the child, but she has her limits. When she says to him, he can't be racist that way, and then he turns around at her and says, well, why didn't you take a black baby? You could have gotten a black baby for free. Yeah. Well, she had her limits. She didn't want a mixed ethnicity child. She wants a perfect white baby. And I think in many ways, that's not, I mean, who are we to judge whether that's right or wrong? It's very difficult to have a mixed marriage in this society. It's very difficult to have a child that doesn't look like you and explain to people in the grocery store every single day that, oh, it's adopted. I mean, I think that these are big, some people have no problem with that, and some people have a huge problem with that. He has to explain to his mother why he can't have a Jewish baby. That's not even talking, you know, white or black. That's talking, you know, something completely different. You know, and I think it's a really good point, and I think that's what's one of the things that really drew me to the play is just these things are so complex, and, you know,
I think the base of drama, which is the reason I really love this play, it doesn't give you any answers. It doesn't give you any answers, and I think pat answers are wrong. If a play gives you a nice tied up in a bow kind of conclusion, I don't think it causes it. The fact that you're all here today means that you've been thinking about this, and you've probably been talking to other people about it, and I think that's the value of a really good play like this. Yes.
Yeah, I think something that both you and Ursula touched on were I think that there's a lot of ambiguity in a lot of the characters. I think that what you're talking about, how drama brings things to life and brings controversy more to life, I think it's because the characters are real. It's because we see a real human side of all of you. I mean, I wouldn't say that I like any of you completely. I don't. But I wouldn't say that I hate them all either. I wouldn't say that I would say that I identify with every one of them but the lawyer. It's okay. But I think it's interesting how this sort of displays. Hello, go back. I can speak in sentences and I can speak English, yes. This is why I'm not on stage.
They provide us the lines, we don't know.
Oh, that's not the part. I think it's important, you know, to listen to you talk about both sides of you warring, you know, the side that you know would want the baby and the side of yourself that would, in the same situation, would maybe not. And I think it's important to know that when you played that character, there was moments that I could see when you would be like, no, no. There was some thought there. And I think in dealing with these issues of class and race, I think those are such touchy subjects, especially for a group of people. I mean, let's look at the room and look at the races of most. 99.9% of the people in this community you know, and sort of we're all into social justice and we're all into that kind of thing, but when the proof is in the pudding, what, how do we react? What do we do? And we saw how various characters are going to react, and I think each of us, you know, can find some way of doing that. And I think that the issues are much more ambiguous than we often say. It's not cut and dry that, you know, Al's going to be this redneck Hoosier hick who's, you know, racist idiot. He's mean and he slaps his wife and all these things, but he's a person. And I think it's interesting to see how we all fit into that and where we go with that. Enough of my soapbox for today.
I was just going on what Rebecca said earlier. I thought it was interesting how much it's about class. I mean, every character is hypocritical, and yet how much we flinch, or, you know, originally has to do with class. I mean, you might say, oh, I would never say that word, you know, or I would never do this. And yet as the class rank started getting higher, you think, maybe, you know, people have their limits, they start making their decisions, and yet, you know, we kind of ease in. It's not as atrocious to us.
Well, I think there are a couple of physical things that I was watching during first act. I was watching people from the balcony, and a couple of things that I saw throughout this, in this community even. When the white bread came out, there was this general.
I've seen white bread.
Yeah. There was this general reaction.
Yeah. We're just drooling
on salivation. Yeah.
And the recognition of Jell-O, with the little dab. There are those kinds of things which, in some ways, speak to this class issue. You know, somehow we're more educated, we're above this, we react to the way, that's the way those people live, Yeah, yeah. And so I think the play really pricks those balloons all the way through as well, the whole business about you drink coffee when you're pregnant. Well, you know, it's smoke cigarette. I mean, all of those symbols, I think.
I like the kind of the subtle play over money. You got a wealthy man and a man of poverty, both trying to strike the best deal. And at one time, one looked like the villain, another time the other. But in both of them, just being human at their level.
Yeah, very, very good.
And the shift in power and control.
Yeah, I love the character Val, and I especially love what Ted did with the character Val, because I think at the beginning, I mean, you think he is this stupid hick, and then when he comes to the hospital room and starts dealing with both the lawyer and Richard, I think he holds his own, and certainly at the end, the sensitivity that he portrays to his wife.
Can I ask you, though, on that, where I didn't see the stereotype broken, I guess, in that same delightful way, was about the fact that Joe is Jewish. I think that was an unnecessarily stereotypical role that never broke out of that in the same way, and I think the playwright had a blind spot there.
Yeah. When I first read, I told Ted this. I said, so often women in theater, correct me if I'm not wrong, careful, women in theater complain that because most of the playwrights, unfortunately, are male, and a lot of the women characters in a lot of plays are not written with the depth that a lot of women would like. And I found in this play by a woman, I felt that the male characters were not given the depth. When I first read it, I told Ted, didn't I? I said, you know, one of the things I really find objectionable about this play is that I feel all the male characters are stereotypes. And, you know, the lawyer is, you know, he's a sleaze, you know. And so I think that's...
Good casting.
Yeah. My wife's father is a judge, and my sister-in-law is a lawyer, so I tapped into that for them. But I think that's one of the issues, and I agree with you. I think that a little bit the Hollywood Jew stereotype.
Whereas I think Ted's character is a male character. I mean, you had a chance to really show us some very wonderful and surprising sides of your character, but Joe didn't.
But I also think that he's given, and what Ted brought through, not God, I felt sympathy for Richard too, but I think Ted, the arc is longer. Mm-hmm. The arc for Richard's character is shorter,
yeah,
because
yeah.
he's only got basically right. one yeah. continuous scene
yeah.
Where you see Al over two acts.
Yeah.
Well, I loved Al's line. He addressed the issue of his poverty, and he said, I can't afford to keep my baby. We're too poor to have the baby.
Right.
Well, the way he and said it, that they could buy anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he had the pride that he wanted to keep. Yeah. He wanted the checks in his name and be the provider.
That's what I was going to say, because in some ways you could definitely say that they're stereotypical. I mean, he is an alcoholic. He does, beat his family, whatever. But
whatever.
I think she the playwright also does address what might cause those things, which I think she does a nice job of. Maybe, yes. I'm not sure, not being able to watch it, but working with the material, there are so many hints of just, not being empowered and not being able to pay for things and, things that would drive people to find other comforts or, find other ways. I mean, just frustrations come out in different ways. And I think you're right, and I've heard this, we've talked a lot about this with the whole stereotypes. Though it's very interesting, she rewrote this for Showtime, as I think someone mentioned, the same playwright rewrote it, and she changed a couple things that were really interesting. Mm-hmm. She made both Rachel and Ron Jews, which made it much more of a thing between religions, as opposed to that he was Jewish and she had a Christian background, which I thought was very much more effective with the whole, but you're going to have Easter, right? I mean, not even understanding that they're Jews. They're not going to celebrate Easter, but that was a bargaining part of it. And there were a couple things like that she changed, which I thought was really interesting because she probably lived with the play for a while and thought about a lot of those things herself.
And the producers of Showtime maybe had something to say about that too.
I think television tends to. I think here first.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say I think you've selected the right careers because I think all are very gifted.
Yes.
And I applaud.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And Joe, as much as you were afraid of how people would react to you, I think your character had two lines that had the most integrity. And one of them, Ursula, you brought out was about the you couldn't love a child that was disabled. And better say that now than harbor that internally for that and go ahead along with Rachel and have a subconscious negative effect on the child for the lifelong. But the other one was about your impotence and your dialogue that broke up the logjam mm-hmm. for Al. And I thought that was a real touching moment. So I thought you brought, that's what I loved about it. Each character had some very endearing qualities and some Achilles heels, And it was just a real rich thing. It was great.
I thought one of the big unanswered questions was, what really was the reason why she couldn't keep her baby? And it seemed to me that there was a possibility that those other children had been taken away from her because her husband was abusive, and that was why they were living with the grandmother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think that was part of why they were, for me, I made a couple choices about that. It's not clear at all. It could have just been as simple as the space. There just wasn't enough space in their trailer, because I live in a trailer. But that was an interesting thing that I thought a lot about, that she would probably put them over with the mama, because she obviously talked to them every day and did things with them and cooked them supper, and she was very involved in their lives. Yeah, but that's an interesting observation that I had thought about.
See, and I didn't think Richard was a mean character because he would have gone in and watched if his wife had insisted on it, and he knew his limits.
Well, I mean, I got the. I mean, you said to him, you know, would you want to watch? I mean, am I wrong? Am I totally wrong here? I mean, you were struggling within yourself, but you were being honest about your feelings, and you knew your limits. And that's not a mean person. You know, I mean, I didn't think of you as a mean character at all.
It's okay.
Not fun.
I did, and
here we go.
I think he just was speaking out of fear. He's kind of shallow and not well, not you, Joe, but well, maybe. No, but I mean, I think that he wasn't willing to try anything new, and wasn't willing to take any risks or even see the baby to take that possible chance that whatever had happened between the baby and Rachel would happen, you know, that he didn't see that. I mean there wasn't much stepping out in
I thought,
but he already made a decision to adopt a baby. That's a biggie.
Yeah. He didn't really make a decision to adopt a baby. He made a decision to adopt a perfect little baby.
I thought his rule was very realistic because until we're faced with a choice such as that, we don't know what we do. Mm-hmm. And I think we'd all tend to back away from a child that was handicapped in some way.
That's an interesting issue.
Which one of you asked about whether the baby would be adopted? Which one?
Tracy.
Okay. Yeah, and then of course you said, oh, sure. Oh,
there's all kinds of people that do that.
Can I go back 1 second to this thing of whether or not, why I couldn't keep the baby? Can I say one more thing about that? I thought a lot about that too, because after they're not going to take it, you know, why don't we keep it? And it was interesting how we'd almost gotten caught in this corner of, I'd already told my mom that the baby was stillborn. Yeah. And I'd already set up this whole thing. I hadn't gone to church. You know, I'd sort of like created a situation where there was no way we could keep this baby. And then there's the practical issue of, we can't pay our phone bill, our car doesn't work. You know, we don't even have our kid. We didn't have a place that is big enough for the children. We he can't get a job. He's drinking more and more. You know, another child in this situation. I mean, you know, but it is. I mean, that I just wanted to say that was so complicated, and just that in a way, at the end, there was just no way she could ever. Like, how would she ever explain that? You know, it was a mistake. The hospital. You know.
I did see the TV performance of the same play, and the other children were in the acting there, and she did have a pretty good relationship with them, because the older child was talented, and I think she wanted that older child of her own to have some advantages too, but she couldn't. And I think eventually maybe the grandmother did find out that there wasn't a baby. I think there was some kind of conflict going on in there.
That would add to the story.
Yeah. And I think the father did have some relationship with the other, because I think he even took them out to dinner when I used some of the money
I don't know what I can add to the conversation. Except, first of all, it really hooked me. I sat in the front row backstage, so I felt like I was in the living room. A lot of this is my story, the story of my life, because I bought children, I suppose you could say. 10 years ago, my wife and I adopted the two black children that are here in Fulton Village. From the country of Haiti. And this past May, for the first time in my life, I had the opportunity to go to Haiti. Spent a month working there, and during that month, made contact with the family of my children. So that when you two women came face to face, I was there. I came face to face with the woman who gave her children. And we had the opportunity through an interpreter. I didn't know much Creole at the time, I knew a little, but to talk about the tremendous love of a mother to be able to do that, of wanting the best for her children. And from my perspective, the great gift that she had given to us and her willingness to do that. So, all along I felt like I was right in the middle of that. And I've really not had, until this year, I suppose, the opportunity to think through a lot of those thoughts. I kind of feel, as I listened to all this, that God kind of brought me to this point to put this play in my lap, having been there to kind of talk through and sort through a lot of the feelings. So I thank you for the opportunity to do that, to be there.
Thank you for sharing.
What angered me was, I don't know what your circumstances were, but here's a woman with four children already, and she's pregnant again. I know she loves her kids, but she's got a mother, she's got eyes, she does watch TV. I'm too fertile for birth control. We've been through this. You already can't afford the kids you have. You don't have room for them. What are you thinking? Right?
Again, I really think that speaks to education and opportunities and knowledge of a situation. I mean, clearly, she doesn't have control of her body completely. She probably doesn't have access to free clinics easily. A pill doesn't work. She probably doesn't have it every month. She probably doesn't, I think that, again, those things, it's very easy for people who have medical care, have education, sexual education, understand or have a feeling of, again, empowerment of their own bodies and choices about those types of things to say, well, just do it. But it's easy for us to sit here and say that.
I'm not saying I don't understand.
Right.
But it just makes me mad that the society doesn't agree.
I think a lot of the issues that are on the board come down to choices, but not just the choices you make, but the limited choices. And I saw a big difference in the two couples and what ability to make choices. I mean, I saw that Ursula and Alan's being very limited, not just by poverty, but I mean, even just the issue of the abortion came up, and Ursula was very limited what her choice was. She didn't have any choice because of what she believed. And I think there was more than just the poverty that limited people. And I think just in the choice over birth control is again, she was limited in by education. So I think it was more about just the limitation of choices between the two couples and what they had that ability. He had the ability to say, no, I don't want the child, whereas they were limited in their, they didn't have any choice. There was no way that they could make one way or the other.
The dynamic between the two characters, I thought, was great. Because your character coming from money, a lot of health food, health magazine type stuff, over to your character that had it seemed to me a more worldly perspective, if not a world view, but a classic line that was that reality check that kept occurring was when you go, uh-huh.
That was the one thing in the script that I loved. The use of uh-huh in the script. It's so well written, and everyone says uh-huh in a different way, and it's just, it's said, it's a different word.
So very true is that
it's easy for us to say, well, it's easy. All you got to do is this, 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 and this.
Right.
You know, so get on with it.
We found our joke for the weekend.
I'm assuming you added several of the actor and actresses' little lines in there.
Yeah.
Even the one about going into the some actors may.
Oh, that's in there.
That's in there? Oh, really?
Yeah, that's in there. No, we. I'm very. I try to keep as word perfect as I can. It was a little tricky with just a week of rehearsal. We had to, you know, a reversed word or phrase here and there. But I've done a lot of writing lately too, and I'm just more and more aware of how much pain and sweat and blood and tears go into writing that I try to honor the playwright or the author as much as possible. That was the text with a few changes for four-letter words.
It has those resonations that all of us that are in the theater, that line, it just popped. It's very funny because, I've had a few actors who liked it. They liked it. They were funny. Yes.
The desperation was part of what really hit me out with you. There's no way you can care for this child, there's no way you can have this child, what are you going to do with this child? And when I got back to my room and was just talking, abortion was not an issue for you. And yet you were so desperate at the end that once the child was born, you were willing to kill the child then.
That's right.
That seemed to be the only way out of this terrible dilemma.
To protect the child, which I thought was just, it's not for her.
No.
That brings up a theme too for me, is this child that doesn't speak throughout this play, and the way it is a bargaining tool, and it is a future for them, and it is a gift, and it is a burden, and this child is just there the whole time. And it's danced around, and I love the theme of that metaphor of a dance going on. I love the metaphor. I think there really is a strong line throughout the first act when Wanda and Rachel are negotiating this, and she's so desperate for it and so what is she willing to let go? Bottled water, cigarettes, coffee,
vitamins,
what is she, and then where does she draw the line? And then that happens at the end of Act One, where she really feels it is being used as a bargaining tool and we're bribing her for more money. So it's more than a cha-cha. It's got a lot of other, it's got a lot of other dances in there too.
I guess I'll add one of the things that came up for me in the first act between the two women. This story paralleled that my sister-in-law, she went through the same thing with a birth mother. She can't have children. She's adopted three already from foreign countries and had an opportunity with a baby from the United States. Met a woman on the internet and conversation started and they met one another. She went to the home. She was involved in this woman's life. And when you were so adamant that, I'm not leaving this hospital without a baby, and you showed pictures then of the baby's room, you were so prepared, and that this happened to my family, and that, my sister-in-law actually was at the birth, cut the umbilical cord, had pictures, came home, showed us all, this is baby Isaac, we were all ready, and then the baby was in foster care for a few days while all the court proceedings took place, and then the mother changed her mind. And it was up until then, my sister-in-law called it the maybe baby, the mother, the birth mother said, well, no, this is your baby, this is yours, and she said, I can't have it. The baby was a product of a date rape. She didn't have any kind of connection with the father, didn't even want a part of it, and then at the last minute, decided to keep it, and it sort of goes back to why do teenage women or other women keep their babies when they haven't the resources? Or this was a very well-educated woman, but she was desperate for love and was going to find it in a baby. And then when you two went home to your to your nursery, to the home that you prepared to bring a baby into, then, you know, what happens with, you know, your mother and the family and all of that. And somebody asked me, well, what happened in your situation? And it was a good year or so of grieving, and finally she took all the materials and things and just burned them and said goodbye and had a, you know, this is the end. And she's going to love, she's grateful for the three adopted children she got. And but it's just, you know, there's so much even more to to that. And it was a really good timing because we're all going to be together. We're going to a family reunion from here. And but just to kind of remember that and know that we're not alone. These issues are just so real.
Just a survey, maybe an informal. How many people know someone who has been involved in this kind of situation, the Richard and Rachel situation? Yeah, I think it seems to me it's happened because of the internet, because of the legal system. There are lawyers like Ron in this case who specialize in this kind of prearranged adoption process. And one of the hardest things for me to do in approaching Ron's role is to detach myself emotionally. Because for him, he does this, he cranks this out, and so it's his business, and he can't really get emotionally involved, except for me, the moment of highest emotion for Ron, my character, was in the scene with Richard, when Richard says, do you know how my mother and father had a baby?
Oh, yeah.
And that touched me every night when I was on stage with him, because the pain, I identified with the pain, and suddenly that pulled it out of this, you know, this is just a business, and I've got everything in my Palm Pilot, and I've got all the data of when all the babies are going to be born, so I can look one up. If one doesn't work, I've got another one ready to go.
Yeah, GPS system.
But I think that's from that point of view too. Is just it's a 90s or a late 20th century phenomenon.
Having gone through the experience of adoption, I found that part of the play to divert from the reality of adoption. And that was the understanding of all the risks that were involved in the process. The human for human and maybe beyond human risks that you are partaking. That people who normally biologically reproduce have faced. But in this case, it's now also part of a transaction. Mm-hmm. And I recall very early in our process of having to, in great detail, articulate what we would or would not consider in adopting a child. And at first you really do not want to have to articulate that, because you're laying out biases, fears, limits of knowledge and experience. So that doesn't make good drama, but it's a reality. At least maybe the more sensitive adoption programs that there certainly are, and I'm not saying that the desperation and the access around I guess more public, more open arrangements exist, but that at least is my experience.
I think that is pointed up a little bit by one line in the play. The lawyer has one line. I'm very careful when my clients give me specifics. I don't want to waste anyone's time. In that regard, I mean, in this case, they didn't want somebody short. And so that became one of those issues. And I think it points out that clients can.
Along those lines, I was in processing this last night, came up with the gross analogy that this whole situation is now I'm shopping for a baby, you know, buying a product. You're the lawyer's the businessman trying to sell it, you know, working the negotiation. And adoption's analogous to going to the store, seeing the product, bouncing it on the ground, you know, seeing if the ball works, you know, playing around with it. And what Tracy and her husband were going through was, you know, like mail order, something could get damaged on the way, could be broken when it arrives. That's not really what we expected. And that was very powerful. I mean, it's like the 90s, it's all commercial,
It's all returnable like the dress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
I also like the way everything Tracy got turned into something else.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Everything
what?
The dress that you gave her turned into something else.
Thought that's the very poignant part of this play, because people who can naturally reproduce, you don't have a choice with that baby when it comes out. And here with the whole adoption process, to have those choices now, it's really mind-boggling.
Yes.
What was it about the play that made you concerned about the reaction of a community of Holden? I think through our discussion, we've expressed appreciation for the issues that the play dealt with.
You or me? Me?
No, the director shouldn't have that.
I've been coming up to Holden since, for almost 16, 18 years now, and so I know the community pretty well, and I was excited to share a controversial work. I knew it would generate this great stuff, and I would just assume kept all the language in there, not changing.
I thought at the beginning of your presentation there was expression of concern about
It became important to present this material in a sensitive way, because it's a family environment, and it is strong material, has strong language. So it was just important to say that up front, so people knew people had a sense of what they were going to be involved with.
That it dealt with significant issues. Yeah. It's not just a little piece of
paper. I appreciated the warning.
Wasn't it also, though, that when you sent the play, it had resistance? I mean,
there was some discussion once the play was up here whether it should be done here, and it was able to be worked out. So I don't know. I'm glad it worked out. I'm glad. But it was important to say it up front.
Yes.
Because you don't want to, my experience sometimes up here, you don't want to surprise people too much with stuff like this, because then, again, too many of the four-letter words, and people are closing their ears and their eyes, and it's just this reactionary thing, and then we're not dialoguing like this anymore. We're just debating and fighting. So.
And there was fear that when we first looked at it, when you had the performances that we had before that were fun and light, and you could go and get your ice cream and come in and sit down and make noise and do whatever. And so they were concerned about children or people who were sensitive to these issues just coming in and hearing me say the F word, or talking about, you know, I'm not going to take a retarded baby, and what's going on here? You know, this is supposed to be a Christian place or whatever. So as soon as he turned it into a serious thing where, you know, don't bring in your food, it's serious, it's, you know, be prepared, and then that made it okay.
I think the one thing that and we talked about this yesterday, and Ted made those comments, and I really appreciated last night, is that last night the VC turned into a theater.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And turned into a formal theater. Mm-hmm. And there was theater etiquette present.
Yes.
And I really appreciated that. all, I think all of us did, that there was respect for the work of the people that were doing it, but respect for the material, to give time and space and focus. We decided to do it in the round because it's a very intimate kind of piece. And it was my initial suggestion, having done plays on the old stage where somehow you feel really distanced from it, and I think the in the round became a really good, a little bit more difficult because you have to light it from all sides so everybody can see it. But and sound is a problem. But I think there was a real excitement last night, yeah, seeing as many people, yeah, as there were, and being part of the community. Theater began like this, with a campfire in the middle, with folks gathered around a campfire. And last night, I thought we were all gathered around a campfire,
listening
to a story. And that's the essence of theater. And that may be a good place to end this discussion. Thank you so much for coming.